Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Metaverse Podcast. This is our fourth episode for the spring 2015 anime season. I'm Jero, joined by Faux Shizzle.
Hey, everyone, what's up?
My regular mini-talk partner for the past year plus on
Yeah, that's true.
Nice to have you on with me. We're going to be doing some news. We have a few more news stories this week than we did last episode. We are going to be talking about episodes of Assassination Classroom, Edotama, Ore Monogatari, My Love Story, and Punchline. And then we are going to have a discussion on shonen shows and the formulas that they utilize in the many shonen series that we've seen for the past 30 plus years.
Right, yep.
Wow. Kind of felt old there when I said that.
Hell yeah.
So let's get started with the news. Some good news for fans like me of Assassination Classroom is that a second season has been confirmed in addition to a live-action movie. The only details that we know are that the live-action movie is planned to come out in 2016 sometime, I believe this spring. And we don't know when a anime second season is coming out, but we know that there's going to be more anime, so whatever on top of the 22 is very nice.
Yeah, but that's like, cause I know we have a split core right now, because it's going to, it actually carried over, but so I guess 24 more episodes is basically what they're going to do.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of chapters to do this for this series, and do, you know, 44, I believe, if they're going to continue to 22.
Right, episodes. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty fun so far. I mean, I like it. It's certainly mm-hmm. something I wasn't going to watch at the beginning, and it kind of grew on me after a while to getting used to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. not bad.
Next story, also about shonen. There's a Naruto art exhibition going on in Japan, and in there, a lot of great art, of course, but most notably was a picture of Hitaki Kakashi without his mask on. It's we went through an entire series never seeing what Kakashi's face looked like, and we see this picture and it's just a face.
Right, nothing. I would say nothing yeah. special. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of, you see it and you just go,
how funny would it be if like he really did have buck teeth or something like that?
Oh yeah,
it's something completely
that.
Random.
Episode 101 still has a unique place in my memory of the Naruto series when he had those buck teeth and they
Big
were
lips.
Imagining. It's like the weirdest anime original ep of that series.
Right. It's I think that's the thing with anime. You put a mask on someone or anything covering their face, you want to know why. Mm-hmm. You know, what's behind the mask? Oftentimes, yeah. it's really nothing special.
And actually, thinking back on it, they did it to good comedic effect with that, you know, the buck teeth that you mentioned. And on the subject of Naruto, Naruto's son, Boruto, is going to be getting his own solo movie coming soon. We've seen some details for a little while about the casting of characters. The Naruto spinoff is going to debut in next week's issue of Shonen Jump. So Naruto lives on through his son.
Right. The only complaint I have is I'm not sure if they're using the same voice actor for his son as they use for Naruto. If they kind of do that, I feel that's kind of lazy. Like, they could have, you know, hired someone new. You know?
Yeah.
But I'm excited for that one. I mean, I'm not a big Naruto fan, but I'm curious to see what they do next, even though I think we want to talk about in the discussion that I don't know what else they could do with that. I mean, it's probably going to be the cut-and-paste original Naruto story all over again.
That's what I'm worried about. That it'll feel too much like, well, I've already seen this. It's just the children of characters we've watched
right.
before.
Basically taking a step back from shipping in back to the original Naruto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next up, Scarlett Johansson has... We've seen a number of news stories about the Ghost in the Shell movie over the past few months, including that they had brought her on and that it was to the point of being greenlit for production. And she confirmed in a press meeting for Avengers Age of Ultron that she expects filming to begin in early 2016.
I'm not sure I feel about this movie. I mean, it's, you know, we've only seen one anime movie come out, Dragon Ball, and it wasn't really a great reception for that. So, I mean, comic books lately have exploded, so that's a big thing right now.
Yeah.
I would love to see, you know, a manga or something actually get on the radar. I mean, I know they did that Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah, that's what I kind of hope it follows in the footprints of that movie, because it felt like its own movie, and they adapted from it. I'm kind of speaking out of my butt because I haven't seen Live, Die, Repeat, but I'm just kind of hopeful that they can adapt it in a way that makes sense for the audience that they're making it for, this American audience, because you just can't have the characters keep their name, for one, because that just seems ridiculous. But
or you put them in settings that they don't really belong in. The Dragon Ball movie is the biggest example, because they took a character that doesn't, in the anime and manga, doesn't go to school, it doesn't go to high school, it doesn't go to college, but they put them in a college setting, and it just doesn't work. So a lot of times people are going to look at it, oh, anime movie, it's going to be just like bad like that. But I'm hopeful they do something with that. I mean, they got a big actor right there. She's a pretty big star. So if anyone can get star power going for it, maybe she can get it going.
Right.
But I'm still kind of 50-50. It's probably going to be a big... Because even when I watch the anime, it does have all these, you know, techno jargon. And you're like, okay, well, I guess. And you don't really understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, it flies over my head half the time when I watch it, so...
Yeah, I think the boring answer is that we just need to see more.
Right, a trailer first.
See where this goes, because recently a picture of Jared Leto's version of the Joker for Suicide Squad has came out, and of course everybody's got to have their initial impression that I believe some will hold on to through the movie's release of what they think of that design choice for the Joker.
Right, yeah.
And our last story is a bit of news about us. Actually, you may have noticed it on the site, is that we have hired 3 new writers here at Metanorn. You've seen posts from Irene Sharda, Keon, and Samsara, so do welcome them into the team, and we will be having them on the podcast next week for our usual New Blood special.
And I found it funny that they're tackling like the harder hitting shows that are a little harder to block. Like, you know, you got I forgot the name of the show, but Sidonia, and we got, Ori Monogatari. Just some of the more popular shows that have been kind of, I guess, neglected. I mean, before I even hired him, it was just kind of like, it's hard to write about every single thing that comes out. You know, even me, I've dropped reviews for a show about rock because it's just not very interesting. So I wish them all luck on their new shows they're tackling. I think they're going to be pretty welcome here as far as the commenters go.
And I remember my first show was Sengoku Otome, Mamoru Paradox, which probably a lot of people don't even know was a show because it was so mediocre. But
I did the one about the two silver-haired kids are in an incest relationship. I did that show
for Sora.
Yeah, that was my first series I vlogged. So at least, you know, with them, they got these popular shows that are pretty much big hits. I mean, no one's going to do Dungeon here in a few days. So they got the 3 big ones that everyone's been looking forward to.
Yeah, and I hope to have them also, in addition to the New Blood podcast, on here throughout the course of the season. So let's get on to our episode discussions now. I will get started with a show that's midway through its run here, and we just mentioned it earlier, Assassination Classroom, episode 14. And what I enjoyed about this episode, in addition to the usual episodic nature and fun that the kids and Koro-sensei have, is that with Terasaka's story, it was felt a little bit different to me in the way it kind of set up the characters in that they weren't so reliant upon Terasaka's flashback to kind of establish where his standing is in the classroom. And we were familiar with him from the first episode as the guy that made Nagisa kind of go kamikaze on Koro-sensei. But with this, and comparing, and with Itona especially, comparing him to Karma-kun and saying how Karma-kun is much stronger than you are, even though Terasaka is a more physical big guy, it kind of sets up like what Karma's role is in that class in addition to Terasaka.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. I guess the cliche thing, he's the kind of the high school bully that, right, you know, he doesn't really care about school or everyone else kind of does, so he's kind of looking at his future, saying that, well, if I don't, you know, I've always been this guy who bosses people around. That's really all he knows. So I guess trying to study and be the proper student isn't what he wants. So mm-hmm. he kind of goes against that. And a lot of times you see him in the episode, you don't really see him in the classroom at all. I noticed that too when I see him. Like here, mm-hmm. he's not really hanging out with any of the students. He doesn't really consider them friends. So, and even he goes as far as the hate on them because they're getting close to Kara Sensei. It's like, you know, they call them like they're freaks because they hang out with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kind of feels like he kind of looks at the class very differently from the others, whereas others have very much come to appreciate actually the way Koro-sensei is teaching them and evolving them as people in addition to trying to kill him. Terasaka sees it almost in the business sense of like, we're actually, instead of having to suffer through just being a part of the end class, that, oh, there's something to actually, you know, we actually have to kill this guy.
Right, and he prefers getting, you know, he does enjoy getting paid versus getting, I guess, you know, educated and all that. So he goes that way when he meets the other assassin, which his name kind of, I blanked on his name, but he's kind of, I guess, uses him. And that was kind of interesting how he finally realizes that, oh, well, I've been used, so.
Oh, yeah, Shiro.
Kind of comes around, yeah.
Yeah, the white guy. And that was interesting how quickly, when he realized, oh, crap, they're not doing this how I thought they were doing it. And Karma-kun just came up to him. And Terasaka is very quick to shift blame. Like, oh, it wasn't me. It was actually them. They caused me to do it. Well, what are you going to do about it then? That's what I really love Karma a lot on this show. And he's such a great character.
Oh, yeah, he's fun. I like him. That, and I'm partial to his voice actor because it's an accelerator.
So, oh, yeah, like, that's right.
I like his voice when he gets serious or when he screams, but he doesn't really scream a lot in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that, and I guess the pool stuff was kind of funny, just seeing them out of a different element.
Yeah.
And seeing he pulled them a pool.
Especially seeing Koro-sensei out of his element, because as the show is done with throughout the series, is kind of display what his weaknesses are. And they're very minor things, like they kind of gets embarrassed. You can put a stash of porn out and he's going to go to it right away. But this one feels like something that they can really use and try to set up a situation in which they can use it against him. Water.
Right, they revealed like three things, the water, the I guess the bug spray stuff,
mm-hmm.
that kind of made him sick. And that was just the grossest part. Snot running everywhere.
Yeah.
And, I think the last one at the end was kind of a thrown in there that if a student's in danger, he will put himself out there to save them,
mm-hmm.
which is another way they could probably use that to their advantage to, you know, stage a fake, like someone's in trouble, and then they get him.
Yeah, Karma had tested that in episode 3 or 4 when he intentionally jumped off the cliff and
right.
challenged Koro-sensei. All right, so Fosh, your show is your first show is Etotama, episode 3.
Yeah, this episode continues with Neon Ten still trying to get into Chinese Zodiac, which is kind of the theme of the series. If you've been watching from the first episodes, that she, I guess, this really wants to be in the Zodiac really badly. So it's basically her trying to figure out how to. I guess she also is moving in with the main guy. He doesn't recognize that she's built a house in the back of his yard. He gets kind of mad about that. It's out of nowhere, this house is there, and she wants to, I guess, furnish it with furniture and all kinds of stuff, but she has no money. So they kind of go to one of her job sites, and I guess they're maids, are working at a maid cafe, and she hasn't been to work at all. She'll see if she, I guess, assumes she can get an advancement on her check, and she hasn't worked at all. So it was kind of funny. The manager, I don't know what he's kind of this like this other entity, maybe I don't know what he really is, but he came down and was talking to her about, yeah, you haven't worked a day in your life. Kicked her out. So.
He's just like this big, shining, bright light that was just talking to her.
Right, yeah, it was pretty funny. And she's just trying all these ways to get out of it. But the main thing with the episode was her fighting the rat. Was the main theme with it, because I guess she got challenged. And not really hearing her friends tell her that you can't challenge the rat, she's too powerful. And she jumped in kind of blindly. And the fight was very one-sided, I would say.
Yeah, it was. And then, of course, you want to mention the ending
Yeah,
because that seems pretty significant.
the ending, one of the other girls, her friend, which is the boar of the Chinese zodiac, jumps in and I guess gets killed through the fight. And it's just something I did not think the show was going to actually tackle, what happens when they actually lose a fight. And they kind of show you that they do die, and I guess they get reincarnated again later on. But yeah, I guess it's like you can actually die in those battles. They haven't really shown that. But the first two episodes, they first do it, it's kind of comical. It's kind of funny. But this one's like, no, it's there are serious consequences for losing.
So is that what you've sensed is the more true nature of the show for these three episodes? I haven't watched one or two.
Yeah, the first two are kind of just silly fights. The second time she does it, it's not really a fight. It's more like she's playing tag with one of the other girls who's trying to, I guess, kind of a, I guess she really likes her, like a Yuri relationship. Just wants to get with her. But yeah, so in this fight, it's the first time you actually see her get her gets beat that badly. Even the first fight she fought the dragon, she kind of sort of won by luck, but this one's is more of the, I guess, the most I guess rough fight she's ever had.
Yeah.
And for me, I always thought this was gonna be just a comedy. I didn't think they were gonna go in that route where a character actually will die. So they actually showed that. It was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, from my novice experience of not having seen the show until this episode, it was a tale of two halves where the first one was this ridiculous girl builds a tree house, and it's a, as he says, my house is like an illegal construction zone or something. And then they're going to buy a washing machine. Like, I'm kind of confused on why that was happening. And then, of course, that whole scene with her and the maids and him saying, you were wrong, you should apologize. But then the episode shifted to this whole rat versus cat thing, and there was some really nice CG action. I thought it would kind of fit with the style of the show that I had seen earlier in the episode, and it looked pretty fluid in a lot of parts, which I thought was pretty nice. And then the death came in, and I was kind of surprised that they would go that far, and especially, the ending seems to indicate that she's gone for good. I don't know about this reincarnation thing, but a ridiculous way to die.
Yeah, it was a little ridiculous because she got stabbed in the head when she was trying to jump in the fight, and the rat didn't really know who she killed, so she has no idea. I took out the boar, I guess. So, but I guess they can't really do. It's supposed to be a one-on-one fight, so a two-on-one is like against the rules, I guess. But it was kind of funny, just like you said, the CG. Yeah, I've been pretty much surprised about the CGI in the show compared to maybe Show by Rock, which is arguably, the people we've debated several times with Highway and other people about. The polished look of that show versus, something like this, which, Edertown, I think, has better CG. At least it's more fluid. The other show is just more kind of cartoonish. It's the characters have no mouth, so you don't see them talking, but it's, I don't know. I guess it's up for debate. CGI is very, just like anything, debatable.
I'm looking. Who animates this series?
Encourage Films and Shiragumi. I haven't heard of them before.
No, I haven't either. I'm not familiar with them, but
The other one they do, Mayashimon. They did some Sinbad movie. It's for kids, though, but Mayashimon's the biggest one on there.
Oh, yeah. All right.
As far as the other studio, yeah, they haven't done a whole lot.
All
So
right.
that's. Oh, they did Squid Girl in season two of Full Gear. So as far as like fighting and animation goes, they're good at that. But overall, I mean, I'm just surprised that you know, because everyone sees the designs, Shaft, the character designer. And for me, it's very strange seeing his designs in a non-Shaft series.
Mm-hmm.
Even, I think, Grisai, I think it's his designs as well, but even that, I don't think it's a Shaft show, but it is funny just seeing those kind of designs and how, I guess, silly they can get with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my only takeaway is that I thought the CG fights were entertaining. I thought the main girl, I kind of found her annoying, like her voice always talking on the loud side. I wasn't fond of that, but yeah, it's a little more interesting than I would have initially thought, to be honest.
Right, and yeah, I can see like people think finding her to be annoying. She's a fairly new actress. I heard her first time in Nanyan Biari. She was the oldest girl who doesn't look like a middle schooler, but she is. She's on that show, but yeah, she can be a little hard to take in at once.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little much.
All right, let's move on to my second show, which is My Love Story, Episode 3. And for people that listened last week with Smiley and I had mentioned that in a crossover chapter with Nisei Koi, the characters were seen dating. What I didn't realize is that this is the episode we would be talking about where they're actually a couple now. But even bigger than that, even more significant than that, is the bromance that Yamato calls it between Takeo and Tsunekawa.
Yeah, that was pretty funny that they actually talk about that. But the funniest moment of the episode for me was when he was hiding under the bed. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't stop laughing. Because
yeah.
She walks in, she sits down, doesn't notice the bed's like, you know, a couple inches off the ground. And he's just sitting there hiding. I thought that was just funny.
Mm-hmm.
This was one that big, you know, they do that silly thing like I've seen in anime movies where you got someone who's obviously not going to fit anywhere, and mm-hmm. they try to make him hide. It was just funny.
Fit under the bed, and you can still see the legs of the bed.
Right, I'm surprised elevated. He didn't do the whole thing like lampshade on his head and just have him stand there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, he's hidden.
Yeah, and how big he is when she sat on the bed, he probably didn't wince at all. Like,
probably, you know, not.
She seems like she weighs like 10 pounds or something.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird considering how much cake she makes, and you gotta think she'd have some of that. But Tsunekawa is the most interesting character to come out of this episode because the way that he says it straight up to Takeo about how Yamato likes him is that it was incredibly refreshing to see a character just straight up say, hey, dude, she actually likes you, and here's all the reasons why. You're just not noticing them. And then you see the whole thing about how he comes off as a really, really nice guy because all of those girls that Takeo liked in the past that Tsunekawa has rejected comes from the fact that they actually talked crap about Takeo behind his back. But they like Tsunekawa, so he rejected them on that term. So using the Red Ogre, Blue Ogre story during that episode was really well placed, and it further established just how good Tsunekawa comes off in this episode.
Right, because we've seen this before in other anime. They could have easily had Tsunekawa keep that information to himself.
Mm-hmm.
About Yamato liking him, and just ran with it for 12 episodes,
mm-hmm.
and not say a damn word. This series is like, no, we're gonna change it. And actually have, you know, the good looking character who you would automatically assume, oh well, she's gonna go for him. I mean, it's I like the setup how they did that, and I thought it was funny. Also, how Takeo would not believe the fact that she likes him. He's like, nah, no way, no way. Like for a good 5 minutes, he's just kind of drilling in his head, like, no, she does like you. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that was nice. At least they didn't have him completely dense about the whole thing. Even though you kind of had to be beaten over the head about it, which is fine. I mean, I kind of wish other shows would do the same mm-hmm. thing where they wouldn't have this drawn out for so long.
Yeah.
Of a main character liking someone. So it's like, come on, just, you know, realize it and wake up.
mm-hmm. The comparison that can easily be made because of the crossover I just mentioned was Nisei mm-hmm. Koi, where it feels like it could be easier you can understand the complexities of the relationships with Chitoge and Raku because of how they were forced into it and the concerns of the past. But it just kind of feels like the show really, you see it intentionally drag its feet a lot, mm-hmm. which is frustrating. And a show like this is better to not drag its feet. But what I'm most curious about now is where it goes from here. Because
yeah, me too.
So much happened in three episodes in terms of getting to the point now where we can call Takeo and Yamato a couple. So what becomes the focus? Is it more about them dating and trying to better understand each other? How does Tsunekawa factor into this? So I'm really interested in that part of the series now.
Yeah, because we have 20 episodes left.
Right.
So it's like, what else can they do? The only drama they could do is bring in a couple of new characters that from the past that actually do like them. They've changed their ways, and maybe they, you know, have an influence on one of the characters. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason what they could do. I mean, these shows, we've seen them a dime a dozen. So it's like they're going to be probably a love triangle somewhere later down on the road, or a new girl or a new guy comes in that kind of takes maybe Yamato away. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. I am curious mm-hmm. to see where it goes. I mean, I'm not expecting anything heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
But it might be close to, like, you know, just a love triangle. Maybe some random comedic moments thrown in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to that. Our last show for episodic impressions is Punchline Episode 3, Fosh.
Yeah, this one was a weird one. I mean, that's pretty much what everyone describes Punchline as. Just weird. Have you watched the first two episodes?
I watched the first one. I did not watch the second one, so I feel like I'm lacking some context.
The only thing I missed in the second one was more about Robra, the green hair girl, and Ito, the, I guess, computer hacker, neat mm-hmm. character. And I guess more about their past. Like, I guess Robra is trying to be like this exorcist, but she's a con artist at the same time. She's not very good at it, so she needs to find a new career. And Ito, I guess we find out why she's been stuck in her room. I guess she was bullied at school. And so she's kind of stuck in the dorm area by herself. She doesn't want to leave because of that. I guess everyone at school picked on her. And the fact that she has a bear that she found, I guess, is trying to keep it as a pet. It's a very random story they threw in there. But it tied into, I guess, this episode with, I guess, someone coming to get the bear. Which, like, someone from he looks up from a video game character. But I kept calling him Death Gun. Just like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he appears out of nowhere.
He looked like the guy from Killzone.
Yeah, I was going to say games. Killzone. Yeah. Or Jinra, it's a movie.
Oh, yeah.
They threw a bunch of random stuff in there, and I guess he asked the bear. But he cut the bear with a knife, and somehow they healed it later. I'm not sure, but it's a very weird episode.
And that guy seemed to know. He said, that won't kill him.
Right, yeah. Because they also have, like, a bunch of superhero stuff involved, too. With Mikitan turning into strange juice again and trying to keep her a secret identity. Thought that bit was kind of funny. Actually, was trying to trick Ito into thinking that they're two different people.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny. The classic Superman thing, you know. Oh, he's wearing glasses. Oh, you don't know who it is.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing.
Sneaking past her and acting like she fell out of bed.
Right. And the whole thing with her was pretty funny. But more on her, I guess she was, like, raised by the other girl. Open her name now. Mika. Was, I guess, revealed as a scientist, a daughter of a scientist, but she's actually a robot, apparently, mm-hmm. which is kind of confusing. But, so pretty much it was just a very hard episode. There was a lot of things going on at once. I would say that most of the superhero stuff was going on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because a new guy showed up wearing this kind of weird Spider-Man looking outfit. I'm not sure who he is, if mm-hmm. he's the other kid. I know there's a ghost inside the main guy's body right now.
Was he in past episodes?
No, he wasn't. This is the first time you actually seen him.
Okay.
But he did look a little weird, and he, again, a superhero type character. But I guess the main thing in the take of the episode was everybody now knows Mikatan's secret about being a superhero. They mm-hmm. all know that she is Strange Juice. And I'm more curious about where she comes from, because she has, when she's in her superhero form, sure, her hair glows. So I'm wondering, maybe she's an alien or something. Mm-hmm. Cause I don't really know what she is.
Yeah, the episode was titled something about Martians,
mm-hmm. but
not really much came out of that, except for somebody dressing up in a Martian outfit, thinking they're a Martian. I'm having trouble with this show figuring out what it is that's missing for me. Like this episode, I was kind of looking for that little something that would pull me back in, but the whole thing with, I'm forgetting the main character's name, ghost guy.
Yuta,
okay. Like, his panty thing, like, I don't really, like, what, like, other than just destroying the planet, like, what's going on with that? I think there's an opening thing about this government agency that some people on TV are just saying, like, they're the crazy ones.
Yeah, I think they're playing his background, because also that white-haired guy we saw in the first episode, he kind of hugged or tackled the other kid and he jumped, pushed him out of the bus. And I'm thinking that white-haired guy has something to do with the overall plot of the series. That he's a wanted terrorist or something like that, and everyone's kind of after him. So he's got something to do with all this, and I think there's something to do with time travel. Obviously, these characters are probably, maybe not all of them, some of them are from different, I guess, worlds. Obviously, we have the robot girl, which is kind of out there, and also Strange Juice. With her, if she is an alien, it would explain why, you know, they try to keep her identity a secret, because they don't want her to be revealed to everyone. But with Mika, she's got a weird past, too, is that, again, being a robot, it makes you wonder, you know, what are they actually trying to do here? I think Robara and Ito have nothing to do with those two at all. They're kind of in the dark with everything, because you know, if they knew more about Strange Juice, they would easily put two and two together and figure out who it is. But they also the ghost story. We have the ghost thing going on with Yuta. You know, it's like, when's he gonna get his body back? Who's in his body? No one really knows. So I think a lot of people can run into issues with this because they're blending too many genres together, I think.
Yeah.
They got the superhero stuff, they got the ghost stuff, you got the the evil organization, and you got the stuff with the bear and the superheroes again. So it's kind of a mixed bag of everything.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it lacks focus. That's kind of all over the place, which I kind of feel like with that superhero introduction, kind of adding him into the mix, kind of seems odd. And Yuta, during this episode, he was just kind of there. He was just kind of like, okay, we're seeing what's going on from his point of view. And he really, the only thing he really did was, you know, got excited when panty talk was going on. There was one point where they were talking where he kind of got confused to the point that, I guess you could technically call it, his boner deflated.
I mean, one other thing I can think of is maybe this is all taking place in one day, so they're kind of piecing together as one event. I noticed that they always keep going back to the 21st, and I think the meteor in the story is supposed to hit on Christmas morning, New Year's Day, whatever, but they keep going back to that, so I'm wondering if they're going to place all this, everything that's happened as one episode, as like a one big timeline. Kind of like how Space Danny has a reset every end episode. So I'm wondering if this is doing the same thing. A lot of the episodes in Punchline feel kind of out of place, like you were saying. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, episode 6 or 7, we close to the end, it's actually just one day. This is all taking place in one day.
Yeah.
So it would be kind of interesting if they piece it together like that. Or 1 week or 1 month, like whatever they're doing.
It's one of those shows that I'm kind of conflicted on, because that would seem interesting, but am I interested in sticking with it for the duration to see that payoff? Or maybe it's just one where I'm better off waiting until the end, and people will say, oh, you know, it was pretty fun, it had a nice payoff, and it's, you know. All right, we have our discussion topic now. We're talking shonen. This discussion stems from a couple points that Fosh and I are familiar with. One of them we won't mention because it's a very specific One Piece spoiler, but you'll kind of get the gist of what we're going to be talking about when I mention the next one, was that with the Dragon Ball Z movie, the second one coming out, Frieza is back, and he actually trains and gets stronger because in the past he never trained before, is that now there's a a level called Super Saiyan God, and we kind of saw a little bit of a power increase in the first movie with Goku, and it was kind of this whole thing about a level above Super Saiyan 4 or whatever.
Yeah, it's easily, in Dragon Ball Z history, probably maybe the worst way to get a power up,
mm-hmm.
and the most cheesiest way, I would say.
Yeah,
it was kind of shoehorned in there. It's kind of, I didn't really like how they did that in the movie, but yeah.
And that, you know, that scene from the first movie where they mention that Bulma is pregnant and
again, yeah.
baby, and then that they go, oh, we actually have the, I think it was 6 Super Saiyans, or the 6 Saiyans that we need to actually form the power. You have the baby.
Right, the baby who's not even been born yet has a Super Saiyan power. Just, that was a mess. I don't know what they do with that.
Yeah, so Shonen power-ups, you know, we see so many of them, and at what point does it become too much?
Right, I mean, the biggest offender of that is probably maybe, I wouldn't say, well, I don't know, Naruto really kind of is, because and in the beginning, you know, it's also revealed that he's got the 9 tails. Everyone knows that. If you watch the original, even into Shippuden, it's even more stuff thrown in, like the Sage mode with the frog power. There's he does double Rasengan. He, you know, uses the power of the fox fully. So there's a lot of these things that just keep adding up to his power skill, and it makes you wonder, you know, are they doing it for to increase the series' popularity? Are they gonna, you know, try to draw it out more? Or, you know, what's the purpose of a power up that comes out of nowhere?
Yeah.
I mean, One Piece this week, they kind of hinted at this was going to happen a long time ago. I mean, Luffy did train, so this was going to happen eventually, but makes you wonder, you know, is it because they run out of ideas? Are they being told by their editors, you really need to up this, you know, this, you need to do something exciting. So how about throwing this power up out of nowhere?
I think one problem with it is attaching numbers to it. With Luffy, we've seen Gear 1, or Gear 2, and Gear 3. Super Saiyan 1, 2, 3, 4. Bankais and stuff. Like, kind of like attaching numbers to them. Is that as we progress a long time through the manga and the story, is that at some point, these characters are going to run into very strong enemies. And the way that we saw Luffy fight Crocodile, it would seem ridiculous that that would work against Doflamingo. So you have to have this progression where Luffy gets stronger and he gains more moves and he reaches new levels of gears.
Right, I think that's when they threw in all the hockey too. That was also another way to give, you know, non-fruit people an advantage.
Yeah,
right? Like an edge for them.
It seemed like with that, with Haki, is that as Oda was progressing through the story, I feel like maybe he started to realize that for the uninformed, that there are three types of devil fruit eaters. There's Zoan that can turn you into animal. There's Paramecia that adds some sort of special ability. And then there's Logia that is, I'm looking for the word, like it can turn you into a gas or a liquid or something
like
that.
Elemental or something like that.
Elemental, thank you.
Right, because Ace, his is that. And Luffy, I think, is a para one, I think.
Paramecia,
It alters his physical appearance.
Yeah, like him and Robin are Paramecia and Chopper is a Zoan. But the Logia characters started becoming too powerful in a series, like you see the admirals, and so Haki was a way to have the heroes kind of combat that, and also include guys like Zoro and Sanji in that, so that they can have Haki and that they can be more on level with the devil fruit characters that they're likely going to be going up against, because they still feel like they're, although I feel like Sanji has fallen a ways off, is that Zoro is definitely still number two on that crew.
Right, it's a good way to keep power balance, like you're saying. If everyone is running around these amazing powers and the humans on the crew have nothing, then it's like, then what good are they, you know? What are they going to contribute when the shit starts going down, basically? So I see that's why they do it with some characters. But when they have the main characters, it's kind of like Goku, for instance, in the new movie. is a Super Saiyan next level god, which they
Mm-hmm.
even give to Vegeta, which, you know, oftentimes Vegeta's the lower man, the Saiyan pole, I guess. He isn't really in every movie, every series, every arc. He's kind of not the one doing the fighting. It's always Goku. So I think this is like the editor was like, you know, we need to give Vegeta some love. So let's bump him up to that status all of a sudden. When in the last movie he wasn't even close to being a Super Saiyan God, apparently. And now he is. And he actually surpassed that. So it's like, if that feels kind of like an editor probably jabbing the art, you know, the creator. You need to give him something, you know.
Yeah, and it's also very shonen formula to kind of go for this. You kind of mentioned the idea of editors saying like, "Hey, you need to do something to keep this exciting." The recent chapters of One Piece have made that exciting. And many chapters throughout the past series when we see Zoro fight and Sanji doing the Skywalk stuff, that was really cool. So it kind of brings in new excitement, because for a lot of those series, if you just leave Luffy at the level that he's at and everybody else, then you have to work harder at making the fights more interesting with the same skill set that everybody has, and that can't be easy to do.
I was joking with a couple of my friends because they read it too. They're big into all the One Piece stuff, and I was joking to the point where like, okay, what's going to happen when they get to a point where you have to give Zoro a fruit, you have to give Nami a fruit, you have to, you know, you have to give, you know, Usopp something, a gun or something, like to the point where it becomes so, you know, powerful, outrageous, like where Crocodile is like an ant to them now, when they get to a point where they all need power, like Luffy. The gears could go on forever, basically. You can keep going with that forever. And for Luffy, I can see it because he can adapt to different things. And that's kind of what his fruit, I think, basically is. So it's his rubber, he can do whatever. But I was wondering that too. What would you do if, would you drop the series and not feel as excited if they gave all the non-fruit users suddenly fruit powers, like Zoro, for instance?
Yeah, that's why I think Haki was introduced so that they didn't have to do that. And what I kind of like with Nami and Usopp is that, especially, when we look at Nami's her tempo, is that was built using dials from Skypiea. So I kind of like the idea of that being another source of which, especially Usopp and Nami, who are the two weakest characters on the ship, is to find a way to give them power. So I kind of appreciate that little creativity side there, to not rely on some artificial method of
So, I mean,
powering
if we're
them up.
being realistic, I don't think Nami would ever learn Haki. I mean, I don't think she's capable of that right now. Usopp has a form of it. We've seen in the manga. And, you know, or even Chopper is kind of falling back some. Even Franky, I think, is falling back some, too, as far as power goes. Because, but with Franky, it's always, they can just modify him. You know, they can give him a new feature on his body to make him stronger. But yeah, I was wondering that, you know, if, how far would it actually go to the point where, oh, everyone needs his power now because we're fighting like gods now? That's gonna be kind of crazy. But also forgot to mention, you know, time skip is also another way they do power scale, which I think they've done it in one in Fairy Tail, which Phil would consider the lowest of a shonen. It's not really that highly praised in a Naruto. I don't really remember having big time skips.
Yeah, after the moment where Sasuke left, that's when Naruto went to train with Jiraiya for a
Right,
couple
yeah, a
years.
couple years, yeah. The biggest one I've seen is probably, you know, Fairy Tail. They had the one was like 7 years, and one was like 3 years. Recently, they just had another one, which is another year. So they've had a lot of time skips, and I think that's what they're going to do in the new Dragon Ball Z movie, is explain why Vegeta so is up to Super Saiyan God 2, is because he's they're probably going to do a big time skip where he's been training and all this. So.
The Naruto in One Piece time skips are a very typical shonen time skip, where the idea is that they were training to get stronger, especially with One Piece, because they definitely hit a wall and they got smacked by one of the Kumas all the way on the other side of the planet, wherever it was they landed. But I think with Fairy Tail, I don't know the full details of it, but it seemed interesting to me because it was 7 years where they were kind of like frozen in time or something, where they didn't age or technically advance in training, I don't think.
No, they kind of were kind of held back. But even with that, Natsu being the main character obviously had no problem with that at all because he was just as powerful as he was back in the day. Mm-hmm. So for me, that felt kind of a cop-out for them to do that. At least, you know, show them being weak. They didn't really do that. But, yeah, so, you know, time skips are also, like I said, another way they can, I guess, increase someone's power. Mm-hmm. And Dragon Ball Z has the biggest obvious one, the hyperbolic time chamber. It's obviously the biggest, you know, screw you to the training because they can go in there. Yeah. What, it's like 1 day equals a year or so. So imagine if they had one of those in every series. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of thankful they don't. But,
yeah.
I mean, I've noticed a lot of things, even in Bleach. Bleach gets to a point where it's just like, what else can they give Ichigo? He's almost got family ties to almost every single race in the series. Almost.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, even with that, it's like, what can you do to make him more powerful? What, give him this. Give him this. He's related to so-and-so. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
It gets kind of a headache after a while.
The hyperbolic time chamber is a ridiculous, lazy, instant power-up method for storytelling, is that we're going to train in here, and all of a sudden we're going to be able to fight Imperfect Cell and still not beat Imperfect Cell and spawn Perfect Cell.
Right, and, you know, you would think they'd use it more, but I guess it's the whole thing. They can't use it more than 2 days in a row or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can easily tell that's an editor saying that you need to put this room. You need to increase these guys' power. So how do you do that? Well, let's make up this room that can boost people's power by training. It's like, oh my God.
But I think for a lot of series is that with One Piece and Naruto, they were very long-running series. Mm-hmm. So Oda and Kishimoto had a very general idea and what they wanted to do. But as they progressed through the story, it got bigger and bigger. And they probably found themselves in a situation where they felt like they needed to employ that time skip to kind of refresh the batteries of the story. So sometimes it can be done for good and to sort of reset things and get it excited. Like, you know, they called the series Naruto Shippuden, at least the TV series.
Right.
But one series that I felt basically avoided the time skip as much as I can remember. It was very good with lacking the whole power level issues was Hunter x Hunter because that series didn't dwell on Gon training all the time. That's one thing that can be bad about, like, Naruto is very guilty of a ton of training episodes.
Yeah, Bleach has a few of those in the beginning where Ichigo's just learning his abilities. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of training in that. And One Piece has that training, but they actually just like Hunter x Hunter. They kind of skip over it. I mean, we did see the stuff before they meet up again after the time skip. We did see the training they do, but it's not like it's, you know, 10 episodes dedicated to a certain character training.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Hunter x Hunter is probably a good example of that, where we do see it near the end where Gon does get this massive power out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But they also do hint that that's as powerful as he's ever going to get. He's never going to get past that. And he doesn't stay in that transformation form either. It's not like he's going to be, you know, that form forever. It's like, I think actually that hurts him doing that too. It takes some of his life off by doing that to put a strain on his body. So, and even that is kind of a creative way of saying that we're going to go there eventually, but not right now. That's just the future, a preview basically.
Yeah.
Which is, I like how they did that. It's very creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not making it feel like, oh, go and learn a new move.
Yeah. It's not something you can't switch it on and off at will, you know? Mm-hmm. Also, the other thing Shonen loves to do, they love to do the whole, when a friend character dies, the main character gets a boost in power. I've noticed that with a lot of shows.
Yeah. We could do like in One Piece where Ace dies and Luffy just uncontrollably cries and just loses his cool.
Right, and he's just a wreck. I mean, that kind of Hunter heard the same thing with Gon. Mm-hmm. After he realizes so-and-so is never going to come back. He does have that breakdown, which is, you know, also another way, I guess, training, because they have to get over that, and so they usually turn that into rage, which usually gives them a power, I guess, a boost. But yeah, I mean, it's something that we, I guess, shows you just have to do. Like you said, it's, I think it's both good and bad. You know, it's good to make it exciting, but it's bad because it makes you wonder, like, okay, when's enough? Enough? They're gonna give people all these powers. You know, so and so's gonna grow extra arms because it they have to fight with extra arms or extra swords. So it makes you wonder, you know, where things will go in the future. It's kind of exciting, but also kind of not really looking forward to seeing, you know, all these, you know, Luffy having 10 gears. It's gonna be kind of crazy.
Oh yeah.
So.
Hopefully it doesn't get that high.
Right.
Although as long as the manga's been going and how long I feel like maybe Oda thinks it'll go, that maybe there'll be enough time for him to reach Gear 10 by then.
Right, and eventually the moon, because everyone wants to see him go back to the moon for some reason. Because
Oh
they gotta
yeah.
fight Enel again, I guess.
Although Naruto already did that in a movie, so
Yeah. I'm still waiting to see that.
yeah. That's a good movie, by the way, to Naruto. I like the amount of One Piece talk we're getting. I don't get to talk about One Piece much on here, but that's
Oh
very
yeah,
cool.
it's fun.
All right, and that has been our discussion, and thus our fourth episode of the spring season. Fosh, thank you for joining me.
Yep, no problem. It's fun.
What shows are you going to be covering this season on Metanorn?
Punchline and Hokage no Pilatus with both of those with Skyline, and I'm gonna do Gintama with Samsara. We're gonna do a podcast on that weekly.
All right, very cool. And reminder, next week I'm going to do the New Blood podcast. Fosh and I, right now, we plan to get all three of the new writers on and kind of do an interview style thing with them. And I'll still be doing the fifth episode of the Spring Weekly shows next week with another writer from the team. So stay tuned for those.
Yeah, hopefully you don't ask them what the favorite vegetable are, you know, and the favorite color is.
Favorite color.
I'm not gonna ask them that
Yeah, I feel like
question.
from the banners that we see on the site, we can get enough sense there what their favorite color is. Although maybe it is orange, and maybe Smiley and I just kind of stole it from them.
Yep.
Called first dibs on it. So, for Fosh, I'm Jero. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time on Metaverse.
したまぶたの裏側に赤い残像革のカバンにノートとペンをさあ歩き出そう書いても書いても綺麗に Hello, shooting star. Hello, shooting star.